Good evening. This is KATN LP 106.9 Salida. And next I have coming up is Richard Gage. And he's an AIA, is the founding member of Architects and Engineers 911truth.org. He's been a practicing architect for 20 years and has worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproofed steel frame buildings. He is employed with a San Francisco Bay Area architecture firm and has most recently performed construction administration services for a new $120 million high school campus, including a $10 million steel framed gymnasium. Currently is working on the design development for a very large mixed use urban project with 1.2 million square feet of retail and 320,000 square feet of mid-rise office space, altogether about 1,200 tons of steel framing. Richard became interested in the 9/11 World Trade Center high-rise collapses after hearing the startling conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher, David Ray Griffin, and on the radio in 2006, which launched his own unyielding quest for 9/11 truth. And again, I have a co-host here. My co-host here is Matt Clark. And Richard, are you there?
I sure am. Thanks for having me on, Melody. It's great to be here with you.
Oh, great. I'm glad you're here.
Hello, Richard.
Hi, Matt.
There he is.
There you are. Hello.
Hi.
And tomorrow we get a new board, and so I get to learn another one. Okay, go ahead and give us, I mean, I was looking on your website, and you really have a really incredible slide presentation up there that just kind of works through step by step all the evidence to look at. And if you want to take it from there, you have any
open mic, huh?
Yes.
Well, okay. Could I have a comment too, real quick?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, please.
I just checked out your website too, Richard, and I was real impressed. The first thing that jumped out at me is that it looked real professional, and I thought that was a good relief compared to some of the other 9/11 sites I've seen. But it was real professional and easy to navigate around, so that was good.
Thank you. We try to portray ourselves as architects and engineers and not conspiracy theorists,
as some
have called us. We do stick to the science of the collapse of the three high-rises on 9/11, and the three being because most people are only familiar with the Twin Towers and not realizing that there was a third building on 9/11 that collapsed a high-rise into its own footprint and in about 6.5 seconds. And it's extraordinary because this was a 47-story skyscraper that would easily be the highest building in 33 of our states. So it was only about half the height of the Twin Towers, which were, of course, once the tallest buildings in the world. Well, Building 7 was not hit by an airplane, and yet in the afternoon at about 5:20, it begins its precipitous descent in a smooth, symmetrical fashion in at virtually free-fall speed all the way down into its own footprint virtually. This is blamed on a few small scattered fires, which the official story tells us was on about 8 floors, varied in throughout the building on its height. And so this is an extraordinary collapse, if you will, because it cannot be explained by the laws of physics, that is to say, the official story tells us that the building crushed itself. There's 40,000 tons of structural steel in this building designed to resist the loads of it, and they all came down like a house of cards. I mean, the only way that a building can do that symmetrically and at free fall speed is if you remove all of the columns, starting with the first floor, and the interior core columns, 24 of them, all at once, simultaneously, within a tenth of a second of each other. And then followed within about a half a second after that, the perimeter columns within a tenth of a second of each other. Any variation greater than that, and the building will tip over. And so this is a very, very difficult feat that only a handful of controlled demolition companies will even attempt. And the official story from FEMA, who had the second crack at the investigation, tells us that their best hypothesis for the collapse of this building, which is fire and then some random damage from the beams and so forth that flew all the way over 350 feet from the North Tower, which we'll get to that story in a moment. But some random damage and fires. FEMA says this is only a low probability of occurrence. That is to say, their best hypothesis has only a low probability of occurrence. In other words, they have no faith or confidence in their best hypothesis. They say further research and investigation are required in order to verify these results. But unfortunately, for those hoping to find out what really happened, FEMA had ordered all of the steel to be sent away on a boat to China to be recycled. And so we have virtually no evidence left from Building 7. It was systematically scrubbed. There are some photographs of the beams, and the ends of the beams show a ragged cut that indicates that it was melted. They were melted, and in fact, FEMA documents that the ends of these beams had a very mysterious sulfidation, intergranular melting, and rapid oxidation. And the New York Times called this the greatest mystery of all. Sulfidation, because sulfur lowers the melting point of steel. It's an attack on the steel, forming a liquid eutectic, which lowers this melting point and makes it very easy for these beams to be cut. And that's how we have a complete collapse of a 47-story building into only four stories. All of those frames, the beams, the column connections, had to have been cut. They were not bent, or you would have had something like a 20 or story pile where the frame is partially intact, holding itself together. There's moment frames in this building, and they're welded together. There's the strongest parts of the building, the moment frame beam to column connections. They don't bend. They're designed not to bend at all.
Hey, Richard.
Yeah.
I recommended your website to my father, and hopefully he's listening tonight. He might be on the internet, but he's a retired civil engineer, so I thought he might be interested in your website and this program, tuning in. But I'm not certain, but he may be one of the 50% of adult Americans, I read in some statistic, that do not know that Building 7 fell on September 11th, just like you were saying. And I think it's largely because he was one of, millions of Americans, perhaps, that read the 9/11 Commission report, where this whole incident of Building 7 is not included in the so-called official story. And so that might be a reason for that. And so I'm wondering, how much of this relies on physics. I definitely agree across the board with all of the physical stuff. But how much of it lies in psychology, too?
Yeah. Let's put it this way. We can understand that our current administration lied to us about the reasons for going into Iraq. But for some reason, most people can't believe that there could be a conspiracy that is so deep as to caused the collapse of these three buildings. And we've only made the case so far, partially, for Building 7.
Yeah.
And so we should probably touch on the psychology of this after we get through the evidence, because it's a very important subject. And
it's,
I had a hard, I'm a Republican.
Area.
I was shocked. The way I found out about this is that I was driving down the road on the way to a construction site, and I heard it was our local KPFA radio, Pacifica Radio, with the show called Guns and Butter by Bonnie Faulkner, who was interviewing David Ray Griffin. And he was talking about all of this evidence, including the tons of molten metal found at the base of Building 7 and the Twin Towers, seen by the first responders. In fact, the firemen described it flowing like lava down the channel rails in the basements below. The USGS flights took infrared photos and discovered that the surface temperatures on these hot spots over Building 7 and 1 and 2, the Twin Towers, were 1,340 degrees at the hottest, and that's only on the surface. Now, fires in office buildings only get to be about 12 to 1,400 degrees, and the fires were virtually out. And probably put out by the collapse itself. The real temperatures that were creating these infrared images on a surface were down in the basements, four, five, six stories below, where all the tons of molten metal was discovered, even by Leslie Robertson, who described it as of 21 days after the attack, molten steel was still running, he said. Well, it turns out that it's not molten steel at all. The tests have been done now by Dr. Jones from Brigham Young University, a physicist, and he discovers that it's molten iron. Somebody sent him chunks of this previously molten stuff, and it's iron. It's not steel, and it's not aluminum either, you know, from a jet plane. Of course,
so where did it come from?
There's no jet plane in the World Trade Center 7.
Is this potentially from the thermite reaction?
Well, let's see. If it could be, because the ends of these beams, as I mentioned, were melted as well. And he took slag from the ends of these beams, and he finds that it's the slag itself is predominantly iron also, not steel. Very little chromium, and it has sulfur in it, which, of course, FEMA documented, and it has aluminum, and these and manganese. Well, manganese is a highly toxic substance, and these are all together in the EXEDS plot, the chemical matrix of this shows that it is the exact chemical signature of thermite, a high-tech incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. And he finds the evidence in the ends of the beams and in the molten metal and also in the dust, all of the dust, which even from Building 7 was racing down the street in this pyroclastic surge. Like the dust from a volcano where you have this incredible heat, much hotter than the fires from all of these thermite reactions, racing down the street at 35 miles an hour away from all directions from Building 7 as it's coming down. Well, these pyroclastic clouds are releasing tons of tiny little droplets of molten iron, and they cool in the air because if you have thousands of cutter charges throughout the beams and columns in these three buildings, you have this kind of explosive disbursement of these molten iron, which is the byproduct of thermite, the byproduct of an aluminothermic reaction. It forms itself into spheres because just like water does, raindrops, or from a spray bottle under pressure, It forms itself into perfect spheres, and it cools that way. And it, they're smaller than the eye can see, but it's in all the dust. I can take a pinch of the World Trade Center dust that I have, two samples of, put them under a microscope, any pinch, and I see the spheres, even in a toy microscope that I have. So this is extraordinary find. The third evidence of thermite found, and there's a fourth. He also finds these unexploded little chips of thermite, and they're about the maximum size he's found so far is about a 16th of an inch long. They're like little tiny pieces of eggshell, red on one side, gray on the other. The red side is iron oxide. The gray side is aluminum. The proportion is about three-quarters of the thickness is iron oxide, one-quarter is aluminum. This is the typical classic proportions of iron oxide to aluminum in a powderized form known as thermite. When you add sulfur, it becomes thermate. And so these have extremely tiny particles that make up these little chips. And that's called nanothermite, very, very powerful and more explosive. So that's the fourth piece of evidence that Dr. Jones has found. And this is the chemical signature, the fingerprint left by the criminal. And in any court of law that saw the light of day, which is what we're after with AE911truth.org. I'm correcting your website announcement, by the way.
Well, I was going to read it that way, but I didn't know whether they would understand it.
AE911truth.org. which, of course, stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, we are demanding an investigation, a real investigation with subpoena power, an unbiased investigation, and we're actually starting it ourselves. We're putting all of the evidence together. And so we're talking about treason here because, let's face it, Al-Qaeda did not have access to plant these charges in these three buildings. It's just extremely unlikely. These are three of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon, and the three worst structural failures in modern history. So it's absolutely criminal that they did not receive a top-notch, fully funded investigation. The investigation was done under intense secrecy, and the evidence was taken away at 800 truckloads a day out of there, recycled in China. And Bill Manning, the editor of Fire Engineering Magazine, was screaming at the what he called incompetence, but really amounted to criminal negligence of the destruction of evidence in an arson case.
I'm sure there was no evidence of any SEC files found on the scene.
Well, excellent point. The Securities and Exchange Commission was one of the very important tenants, and they lost thousands of cases related to hundreds of the cases they were actively pursuing against firms like Enron and WorldCom. So there's a point of investigation as well. We do have the CIA, the Department of Defense, and the other three-letter agencies in the IRS in this building. So it was extremely secure. And so we're not talking about Al-Qaeda. We're talking about someone who had access to security to plant these charges.
It seems like there was a pretty high level of motivation or, quite a few reasons to see that building come down, too.
Well, there are some reasons, and I won't go into them. But I do try to stick to the physical evidence.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you can't help to ask why, though. I mean,
go ahead. What?
I said you can't help but asking why. You know that ties into it too.
Well, why and how, and of course who?
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Those are extremely important questions.
You might also mention the BBC broadcaster speaking about the standing in front of that building while it's still.
Yeah, there's plenty of foreknowledge here. James Stanley is reporting on the building, It's standing right behind her left shoulder, and she is announcing that the building has collapsed. The 47-story Solomon Brothers building has collapsed, and they even give, and this is 20 minutes before it actually collapsed, they even give the reasoning due to weakening. So someone gave them the story as well. They apologize for this terrible mistake, of course, but does that make them psychic, you know, citing the confusing events of the day?
Well, then you got the horse's mouth, right? You got Silverstein on tape, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Larry Silverstein says regarding his building, the owner of World Trade Center 7, there's been such terrible loss of life, maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it, he says, on PBS TV documentary, America Rebuilds. And then he says, and they made that decision to pull, and we watched the building collapse. So you have to listen to him, and you can hear this video on our website, on the PowerPoint presentation, or the DVD. And you can buy the DVD, too, the two-hour DVD on the website, if you want to just watch it at home. All of the evidence is also listed on the right side, and you can also see the 250 architects and engineers' names who are demanding a real investigation. And anybody and everybody, all of your listeners, please go to the website and sign on. We are trying to get our architects and engineers up to 1,000 by September 11th, 2008. And our other petition signers, which is anybody, up to 5,000. So please help us by telling all of your friends and sending the AE911truth.org link to everyone you know so that we can raise the critical awareness and get past this psychological barrier that America, on the left and the right, all have to understanding and hearing even the truth about the collapses of these buildings on 9/11.
Do you have any fellow architects and engineers doing these talks around the country like you?
There's a few of them, yes, and we're trying to train now by making our PowerPoint available online for people to download and give these presentations. We're giving it a major revamp, actually, as we speak. In a couple of weeks, it'll be all ready. It's very important. But in the meantime, we have people showing the DVDs in theaters all across the country. One of the key pieces of evidence is this former Air Force Special Operations personnel for search and rescue. His name is Kevin McPadden. And I just want to play this for you, so you'll be blown away by this. So a lot of people have not heard this. I'll play him a quote for you.
Okay, great.
It's startling, and then we'll discuss it. Hold on just one second.
Put his hand over the radio, and it sounded like a countdown. And at the last few seconds, he took his hand off, and you heard 3, 2, 1, and he was just saying, just run for your life, just run for your life. And then it was like another 2, 3 seconds, you heard explosions, like, boom! It's like a distinct sound. It's not like when the compression, like, boom, 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 like floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was, boom! And like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
And so this is a credible gentleman who was right up there. He hears the countdown on the radio. And then a couple of seconds later, an explosion. So this is one of several pieces of evidence on the website that you'll see that lead to a lot of foreknowledge. In fact, I'd like to play one more for you. Even more disturbing, if that's possible. Where did it go? This is these mysterious construction workers out at the site walking away from the location of the of Building 7. Where did they go? Oh.
Well.
Here they are.
Okay.
Hold on. So here, caught on CNN videotape, is these construction workers and the police officer. The construction worker is saying, keep your eye on that building. It's about to come down. And then the police officer is saying, the building is about to blow up. There'll be rain and debris coming down. So unbelievable quantities of foreknowledge in the case of Building 7.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been any way for them to know that it was going to come down.
Yeah.
No, I mean, let's face it, after there's been 100 high-rise fires, I mean very hot, very large, and very long-lasting fires in these high-rise steel-frame buildings, and not one of them has ever collapsed due to fire or any other reason. There's been some earthquakes that have brought some mid-rises down, but... here, and we're talking fires that have burned over, you know, 10, 20 floors, over 10 to 20 hours. And these were just a few small scattered fires on 8 floors. And they bring this building down symmetrically, smoothly, in 6.5 seconds.
And these fires were towards the top. They weren't at the bottom, which defies logic.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were pretty well spread throughout the building.
Okay. Now, are you talking about 7 or the
7.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Building 7 we're talking about right now. So I haven't moved on to the Twin Towers.
Okay.
Well, and it has the telling thing, I think, is the characteristic little crease at the top of the building when it falls and how it comes in on itself.
That's a classic crimp in controlled demolitions, and you see that on most all the controlled demolitions that we've seen on TV from Las Vegas. They bring the middle in first by cutting the core columns. This pulls the building, the outside of the building, in on itself so as to minimize destruction to adjacent structures. And then they cut the floor synchronistically timed floor by floor from the bottom up, which allows the weight of the building to be harnessed to do most of the destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you see.
I have a question for you, Richard. Just as far as your own personal history with uncovering this evidence and researching this over the past several years, I mean, I might relate my own psychology a little bit and my own timeline in 9/11 where, from the very beginning, I knew it was a little fishy. I did know that Building 7 fell. But over the next few years, basically I got all my information from the mass media or none at all. So I didn't do any critical thinking up until a point. I'm wondering if you had a point in your history where things clicked over, where you're like, you got so much evidence where you're like, oh my gosh, like this is, because that happened to me. Like, I knew it was fishy up until, and I think I saw Loose Change when that movie came out. And it was almost like I started looking at this whole issue like brand new. You know what I mean? Did that happen? I mean, just to relate to our listeners out there who may, they know about this. They've heard about it. They've heard about different theories, but maybe they haven't seen enough evidence yet to really have that new awakening. Like, oh my God, this whole thing was a setup.
Absolutely. It was so startling to me hearing David Ray Griffin discussing the Twin Towers. And this is the first time I'd ever heard about it, 18 months ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked weird to me, looking back retroactively, but let's face it, we were all in a state of shock watching these buildings come down on 9/11, and you know, right away the experts came out with their theories of pancaking and this and that. And, you know, who are we? Well, architects and engineers are not trained in controlled demolition. You know, 99.9% of us. And so, you know, we've never seen, and we've never seen, we didn't see Building 7. I never saw Building 7 prior to about 18 months ago when I started looking at this. And I, even if I had seen, and I have, I've seen controlled demolition as implosions, as in Building 7, but nothing, nobody's ever seen a huge explosion, a series of explosions producing the quantity of mushrooming that you see in World Trade Center Twin Towers. So we didn't know what to think. We were I just kind of shut down about it because I didn't hear any other plausible theories. But every time I start by to explain this to somebody, I show them the photograph. And that's a photograph right on our website in the front page. And I say, what does that look like to you? So they know it's the Twin Towers because everybody knows that. And they say, well, let's see, it's exploding. Here's the first thing they say. They don't say, it looks like a kind of a collapse in on itself. Well, that's the official story, the collapse in upon itself. But what I heard 18 years ago, before I ever saw it on video from David Ray Griffin, I heard this huge, massive explosion where these beams are hurled 500 feet laterally in all directions, symmetrically, with their ends dripping with molten metal. Once again, this is what
this is 18 months ago
by the iron workers.
Sorry, you said 18 years, but I just wanted to make sure. 18 months.
18 months ago.
Okay. Well, it's fine.
And so these pyroclastic clouds it produces evidence of the incredible amount of heat, pyro meaning heat, with a cauliflower-like unfolding itself. Again, we talked already about the chemical evidence seen inside all of this dust. But in addition to that, in 2005, they find 700 bone fragments, a half an inch long, human bone fragments, on top of the Deutsche Bank building across the street. This is a high-rise across the street. That's just on top of that building, 700 bone fragments. And they continue to find these tiny little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one person was, they found 200 pieces of one person. They found something like 1,500 pieces that were like small enough to fit into a test tube, and about that many pieces that they could only identify by DNA alone, and 1,500 people were not even found. In other words, not even one little tiny piece. They were basically vaporized, along with all of the furniture, the cabinets, the file cabinets, all of the floors. We're talking 110 floors of 4 and 5 inch thick concrete. They're not stacked up and found at the base of this building whatsoever. In fact, they're completely pulverized, and that's what's creating these incredible mushroom clouds to most of it a fine dust and also some gravel, but no macroscopic chunks of concrete. No floors are found at the bottom of these buildings, and virtually everything is blown outside the footprint. There's only a couple of stories of stuff found at the bottom, and that is the indestructible columns and beams, and then also aluminum cladding and some minor other miscellaneous stuff. The only file cabinet they could find was found in the basement, and it was basically a piece shriveled up the size of a basketball. And you could pick it up with your pinky. It was so light.
And having worked with concrete myself, I know that's really nasty stuff, not to mention all of the chemicals and all of the computers and electronics that were vaporized as well. So all
yeah,
of that,
and we were
you know,
told
sprinkled
that was safe,
down.
Yeah, that air was safe to breathe by Christy Todd Whitman from the EPA. And and people are dying. More people are going to die as a result of breathing that toxic stuff laced with asbestos and thermite and all the things you mentioned than have died in the original collapse, and that was 2,744 people. But the thing that gets most people with the collapse of these twin towers is the incredible speed at which they collapsed. The official story basically tells us it's 10 seconds. Well, that's 11 floors per second, or an 11th of a second per floor. It's basically racing down the all sides of this building. We don't have a pile driver, as the official story tells us, up at the top, a 20-story building in the case of the North Tower and a 30-story building in the case of the South Tower, driving this building down. All of the videos show that that pile driver has completely destroyed itself in the first 3 or 4 seconds. After that, what you have is a series of explosions that are tearing the building apart, racing down the facades of the building at free fall speed.
Free fall, yeah. And you can see those little explosions shooting at the side. What do they call those?
Yeah, these are called squibs.
Perhaps
mistimed explosions. And they occur 20, 40, and 60 stories down below the ensuing collapse, if you will. These are high-powered ejections of building materials that occur, explosions that occur at the exact midpoint, most of them, between the corners of the buildings. So what we're told by the official story, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, is that these are puffs of air produced by this giant piston, the pile driver, the portion of building above the impacts, pushing down the air down the hoistway, and it's got to come out somewhere, right? Well, that's an intuitive thing all of us can understand. But first of all, I told you, and you will see as you look at the videos and the photos, that there is no piston or pile driver. Secondly, these are not puffs of air. They're pulverized building materials. And we have the videos, and we can calculate their speed quite easily. It's 160 to 200 feet per second. These are explosive speeds, not puffs of air. Also, this is open office planning. Outside the core structure is this 35 to 60 foot open office space, which if air was coming into it from the hoistway being pushed by this theoretical piston, it would fill that space fairly uniformly and blow out maybe several windows at once, not these highly focalized explosions that we see, probably 12 or so of them at different points.
Yeah, they're just like pinpoint little explosions shooting out. You know, they're real small.
Yeah,
looks like it's coming out of like one or two windows.
So then we're also told by some, not the official story, not NIST or FEMA, but some have come out and said, well, this was shoddy construction due to the economics. But let's take a look at that, because that's extremely important for people to understand, because there's so many rumors out there. This building won an award for its structural engineering in 71, citing, and I'll quote this, for the engineering project that demonstrates the greatest engineering skills and represents the greatest contribution to engineering progress and mankind, from the American Society of Civil Engineers. And that award was given because this was a very innovative structure. It had 47 immense box columns at the core around the elevator shafts. And these were virtually solid steel at the bottom, in size up to 52 inches by 22 inches at the corners. And these thinned in thickness up to 2 inches mid-height and thinner above that. All of this steel was intact and cold and not under fire. And we're told was crushed. This 80,000 tons of structural steel underneath the point of impact, crushed by this smaller body at free fall speed, as if it didn't even exist. That's what we're talking about. This is impossible, completely violating basic laws of physics, such as the conservation of momentum. Well, this was a structure within a structure, this core, and it had its own floor system, and that was 5-inch thick reinforced concrete over about 30 and 36-inch steel girders, all cross-braced. So any pancaking collapse which might have taken place outside this core structure in the open web steel joists that spanned the 30 and 60 foot spans between the core structure and the perimeter structure, any pancaking of those floor systems would have left this core tower standing 1,300 feet in the air, like 45 records, for those of us who are old enough to know what those are, falling like records around a spindle. And then you had the perimeter structure, which was over-designed by a safety factor of 20. This is the first time such a high-rise has been over-designed by so much. It was basically a Varandale truss with these perpendicular and horizontal elements welded to each other in these prefabricated units and then bolted. And that was designed to take all the loads of lateral loads of hurricane, the wind.
Well, yeah, Richard, and also to add to that, what really got me from the videos is somewhere in the videos they have one of the guys on tape that was one of the original engineers or designers of the World Trade Center, and they have him saying that through the whole process, they over-designed it, and they actually designed the building to withstand an impact from, like, a B-52 bomber or something.
And even bigger.
Yeah, several times.
A B-25 bomber hit the Empire State Building, caused
right.
a massive fire.
And so they got this guy on tape saying, yeah, you know, we designed them to withstand these impacts, and that there was, you know, basically a gag order or something that happened, you know, to put on these design guys and not to spill the beans right away.
Well, their clients are among the richest in the world. Leslie Robertson is still designing high-rises,
yeah.
So he's not going to be saying anything about controlled demolitions for sure. He's in a very, very tough place, as are many people. But it was a Boeing 707 that John Skilling, his boss, Leslie Robertson's boss, designed this building to resist. And he said the biggest problem would be that the fuel would dump into the building, but the building would still be there. And indeed, the building was praised by the official story for its response to the building. It oscillated, moved back and forth, kind of rocked, and came to a still point. And the forces above the airplane impact opening arched around it, and it did just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're told was the impact actually knocked some of the fireproofing off. Well, actually, we were told it basically knocked all the fireproofing off around that level of the building, which is kind of ludicrous. These buildings are an acre in size. The floors, each of them, are an acre in size. So you have 110 acres stacked on top of each other. But we're told that the fire was so hot due to the jet fuel that it melted softened the steel and caused this collapse. Well, first of all, jet fuel is just a hydrocarbon. It doesn't burn any hotter than the furniture and carpeting and so forth in the building. And that's about 1,200 to 1,400 degrees under ideal conditions. And this was an oxygen-starved fire, as evidenced by the dark black smoke. And so we have lost my train of thought.
Well, the melting point of steel then is what, like 2,300? I don't know exactly, but it's much higher.
Well, steel will soften to half its strength with temperatures at about 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. I suppose it's plausible if the fire were much hotter and got up to 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit, which there's no evidence of. The steel samples they tested only show 468 degrees maximum temperatures. But even if it did get up to 1,200 or 1,800, as NIST somehow claims, that heat would have to be all the way uniformly around the building
evenly
on the other side of the jet plane impact in order to have this symmetrical collapse which starts all around the building all at once. In fact, we have 118 first responders on record, or oral record, recording as witnesses, witnessing sounds and sights of explosions. They talk about blasts coming all around the building, and then the building coming down. Very interesting. Again and again, it's blasts and then the building coming down. Not the building coming down and then somehow the sound of that creating this kind of crash.
Yeah, you had the maintenance guy who was working in the basement at the time the first plane hit and heard explosions coming from the bottom part of the building first, and then he actually heard the plane, or I don't know what the timeline was, but anyway, some maintenance worker in the basement, you know, heard explosions.
Yeah, Willie Rodriguez.
Yeah, yeah.
He's traveling all around the country. He was brought into the White House as a hero until he started talking, and they didn't want to hear about it. Explosions. See, the explosions in World Trade Center 7 and in World Trade Center Twin Towers are not a part of the official story at all. And so, and there's hundreds of witnesses describing all of these explosions. You can hear and see many of them on our website, AE911Truth.org. And but what I was going to say about the temperature of these fires is that they cannot produce the tons of molten metal. Steel doesn't even begin to melt until about 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That's over twice the temperature that the hottest office fires burn. So what in the world produced that incredible amount of heat, which bent core columns in horseshoe-like fashion, and of course, as we talked about already, cut these beams with the ends of them documented as by FEMA, intergranular melting, rapid oxidation.
Do you think the thermite could have done all of that?
Oh, it's very clear because there's so much evidence of thermite. Thermite is an incendiary. And with the sulfur, it's extremely powerful, and with small particles, even more explosive. So the core columns and beams apparently were cut by thermite. In addition, the core columns are about three stories high, each of them, and they seem to have had other kinds of blasts on the side of them.
Yeah, a concussive blast,
as Gordon Ross calls it. That seems to have busted the welds. There are plenty of columns that don't appear to be cut, but are cleanly broken at their weld points. These beams being 37 and a half feet long, they fit on the trucks perfectly.
Well, and then you
there seems to be this combination.
Well, you have Jones, too, the professor guy from Utah, Stephen Jones, is that right?
Yes.
He points out in one of the videos where there's actual just visual evidence of this white-hot, molten substance flowing out of the building all the way up top before it collapsed.
Yes, this is in the South Tower at about the point of jet plane impacts. Apparently, the jet plane fire somehow ignited one of the thermite charges.
Yeah.
And you have all of this. It's not quite white-hot, but glowing yellow and orange pouring out of the Twin Towers, and we know when something is yellow or orange by the physics of it, it is about 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And so we're wondering, well, why is that molten at 1,500 when molten steel or even molten iron isn't produced until about 3,000 degrees.
Totally. Could you point people towards any videos on the internet? Maybe
The answer is very important.
Thermite.
It's that there's sulfur in it, which lowers the melting point of the steel by half. So that's another more evidence for thermite. And you have the aluminum oxide gas flowing off. Gassing off of this flowing molten liquid. So it's direct evidence.
I would just encourage people out there listening to research on the web. Just real quickly, just type in thermites into Google or Scroogle. And find the video, because I saw this one video in some of the 9/11 stuff where it was this English TV show, and these guys are doing thermite experiments where they ignite thermite, like, on top of a car, and it melts all the way through the car and stuff. And it's just really a good visual image to understand what it is and to see it. So I didn't know if you had any links or, you know, any info about it, but a simple search could do it.
Yeah, and there's a whole set of technical articles, including on thermite and thermate with sulfur, in our on the left side of our website.
Your website walks very well through bad choice of words there, but it walks through the whole process. So I mean, just exploring your site, people will get a real good picture of what took place on the 9/11.
Thank you. I hope all your listeners will not only look at the website, but sign our petition, and all you're doing is demanding a new investigation, a real investigation.
Yes, and Richard, you have any closing statements on this that you'd like to finish up with?
I just think it's so very important for everyone who loves this great country of ours to realize that something very, very sorrowful has happened, and it's not just the murder, as bad as that is, of 2,740 people in these Twin Towers. We have to be looking at some sort of inside job, and we have to, every American who's willing to look at this evidence, and I hope that's all of your listeners, will take it upon themselves to write their congressman, write letters, call into radio talk shows, sign up our petition and others. STJ911 is a great .org is a great website as well, full of hundreds of scholars that are demanding a real investigation. The Patriots Question 9/11 is a great website that points out all of the other groups, such as the Marines for 9/11 Truth, Veterans for 9/11 Truth, Pilots for 9/11 Truth.
Professors?
The buildings are only one small part of this disastrous puzzle that surrounds 9/11. The stand down of NORAD for an hour and a half while these planes were flying around our country needs to be looked at in a real investigation. The fact that the war plans for Afghanistan were on Bush's desk well before 9/11 should be of great disturbance for many people, as should be the other reasons that we have been eyeing Afghanistan. Because let's face it, we weren't after Osama. We let him slip through our fingers. He's being propped up today as some evil man that we need, enemy that we need to fight against, so that we can preserve what we love in America. And yet, what have they done in order to make this fight happen? They brought out terrible legislation to remove our freedoms in the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, the removal of habeas corpus, and now what seems to be flying through Congress, the H.R. 1955, called the Thought Crimes Act by many. It's a homegrown terrorism act.
Sounds Orwellian.
It makes a crime of the use of force, and yet force is not defined whatsoever.
Sounds Orwellian right there, doesn't it?
It's very scary.
Well, Richard, I really appreciate it, and I hope you'd like to come back on again sometime. And
I want to thank you, too, Richard. This is really important to get this out, and I thank you for your call to action, because I think we all hope that those kind of awakening moments happen with people, and I think that happens from the work that you're doing and your website and all of these great videos out there. I would point people to 911files.org, I think. Is it 911files or .org or .net? And that's the one where there's a lot of these movies for free you can watch right online.
Good to know. Thank you.
9/11 files. Yeah, you can see Loose Change and all of like 40 different 9/11 movies right off the website. You don't even have to download them. You can just watch them right there.
That's
so
great.
But I really thank you for doing this, doing the website and getting the message out.
Yes, Richard.
Thank you so much, Matt and Melody. It's been great to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak, too. It seems to be what I was, what I came here to do.
Okay, well, thank you again.
Okay,
good night.
We'll talk again.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.